This is the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Two Bald Nerds with a Z podcast. I'm one half, I'm one nerd, I'm one of the bald nerds, and I live in Houston, Texas. My name is Mark Stuchowski, also host of the Mark Stuchowski podcast. This other fine-looking gentleman, you can't see him because it's not a video podcast, happens to be my cousin, and what might your name be?
I am Dan Bornt, and I live in Rochester, New York. I am the other bald nerd.
Now, see, I teed you up again, and you missed it.
What did I miss?
I said, who might you be? That's two episodes in a row. I'm going to keep doing it. Do you get it there?
Oh, man.
Must be a long day for you.
They're all long, it feels like, lately, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, not the subject of this podcast. The subject of this podcast is SBCs. Now, to me, that means Second Baptist Churches, because that's the church I go to, but that's not what we're talking about. It'd be really weird talking about my church on a Two Bald Nerds episode of the podcast. We're going to be talking about single board computers, and this episode is going to be a little unusual because Danny's going to do most of the talking, because this gets really nerdy. I'm a nerd. I'm really a nerd, but when it comes to this stuff, Danny, like, I stop and pull over the side of the road, and Danny just keeps on going. So, Danny, I'm going to hand you the proverbial microphone, even though we both have microphones, and I'll let you chit-chat for a while. If I have any questions, I'll just go, duh, I don't understand, but go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. So,
you don't mind if I go take a nap, do you?
Feel free. So, single board computers, affectionately known as SBCs, it's basically a computer that is a complete system on a single circuit board. So if you think about most of your modern computers, desktops that is, they're all a bunch of components that you actually, if you actually looked at them, you would have a motherboard, and then your RAM is actually separate and plugs into the motherboard, and your graphics card is usually plugged in with that, and your hard drives get plugged into that, and it's all swapped out, and it's designed so that you can swap parts in and out. Modern laptops, some of the larger ones especially, have that same capability, right? You have the ability to move these pieces in and out. You can replace certain pieces easily without having to unsolder things.
Okay, let me jump in here and ask a really nerdy question, a newbie nerdy question, if that is a phrase. Now, I'm doing this podcast with you on my brand new 2021, October 2021 MacBook Pro. Is this considered an SBC or no?
I believe that a MacBook Pro would not be, only because, and I'd have to do the research on it, I believe some of the components actually are changeable. The problem with the MacBook Pros is I don't think it's easy for you to get into it.
Mm.
A lot of those Apple devices have a special glue on them. They're not really, they're screwed together, the Macs. Or they're glued together, like the iPhones and things of that nature are actually glued together with a very special glue that makes them waterproof, so that water can't get into the edges. So it makes them that there's that IPS rating for waterproofness, and the glue is what helps keep them waterproof.
Now, so what about iPhones? What about smartphones and stuff like that? Are they SBCs?
Now, smartphones would be considered SBCs because they're all on, everything's on one board.
Okay.
Screens generally aren't considered in that mix at all. There aren't any that I'm aware of single board computers that actually have the screen permanently mounted to the board.
Gotcha.
So that's basically what a single board computer is. It's an entire computer that's on a single board. And the size of these things matters. The form factor of these things has gotten much smaller as technology has gotten better. A little bit of history. I'm not going to go into a ton of history, but first true what they considered to be the SBC, that they considered to be the first real one, was what's called the Dynamicro that came out in the mid-1970s, around 1976. And again, it was made by Intel, and it used an Intel processor and a bunch of components that they had put together. And that's considered by most to be the first official small board computer. Beyond that, there's really a big gap because SBCs weren't really a big thing amongst everyday nerds. I'll say everyday nerds because, in manufacturing and stuff, they've been using these things for years for like controlling machines and components and whatnot. But for the intended purposes that I would use them for, or any at-home nerd would use them for, it really didn't start getting big until they came out with what was called the Beagle Board, which came out in July of 2008, followed up by the Beagle Bone, which is still around. The first iteration of that came out in May 2009. And then most people have probably heard of the Raspberry Pi. And I'm not talking about the pie that you eat, although those are actually very delicious. There is a small board computer that came out in February of 2012 called the Raspberry Pi, and it's spelled P-I on the end. And they've gone through multiple iterations. They're up to the Raspberry Pi 4 now. They started off with very small amounts of RAM on them, very low processing capability. Now they, this little computer, which if you think about the size of it, it's probably 3 inches by 4 inches. So if you think about this board, it's about a 3-inch board by 4-inch board, roughly that size. Probably the size of a standard phone. Like if I look at my iPhone, it's probably about the size of my iPhone, give or take a couple, you know, an inch or so. Mm-hmm. That thing has about as much processing. It actually has more processing power than the computers I used to run financial closes on when I worked at Xerox 10 years ago.
Wow.
In retrospect, the Pi 4s that just came out, you can get them up to 8 gigabytes of RAM. And again, all these things are actually soldered onto the board, so it's not changeable. So when you order them, you have to order it with what it comes with, and you just get it. They all run off of, I should say, most of them run off of either internal storage that's soldered to the board, or with the Raspberry Pis, what they do is they have a slot for a micro SD card. And anybody who's familiar with Android phones or some of the pre-iteration iPhones, you used to have that SD card that you had to pop in and out, or that you could pop in and out. Yep. That's what they run off of. So your operating system or whatever you're trying to run on it is stored on that device, and the computer reads it off of there and runs your system. They come with the ability to run HDMI output. So I know the Pi 4 does, I know at least it does 1080p, and it might do 2K. I did just read about a board today, actually will do 4K output, and it'll do it on, it'll do two screens. So you can actually plug two different screens into it and run dual screens at 4K resolution. Now, again, it's not going to be probably as fast or as super performant as some of your machines that you could put together, or an iMac or an iMac Pro or something like that, MacBook Pro. However, the whole intent of these things is to allow people to tinker. Again, I've mentioned this on a number of these podcasts. One of the things that makes me a nerd is the fact that I like to tinker. It's one of the things that makes me love Linux so much. These SBCs allow me the ability to tinker at a different level than what I can tinker with my machine. So I have a desktop that I've put together here. Cost me quite a bit of money because I put all the parts together. It's a gaming rig. And I use it as my primary workstation. It's also used as the primary gaming rig. I don't really like to do a lot of changes to it because I don't want to break it for obvious reasons. It's my primary workstation. I don't really want to break my primary workstation. These devices, the Raspberry Pis, run anywhere from, you can get a very low-end, inexpensive, older model Raspberry Pi for $15-$20. The newer ones are running around $60. Some of these more advanced boards are $100-$150. But a thing, again, if you think about it, you're talking about a full computer on a single board. I am much more likely to purchase one of these devices to play with and tinker it, where I can wipe it clean and install something else on it and just tinker around and play with it, on a piece of equipment that's cost me between $50 and $150. Than on a machine where the parts are all in there and all together, this thing was like $2,000. So that's one use of it. I kind of mentioned a couple of the major players that are in this space. The Raspberry Pi is very hot nowadays. Matter of fact, the Raspberry Pi is so hot, they're sold out everywhere. Like I just checked again today, you can't get them. They're all, everything's on back order. BeagleBone is another one. They have these ones called Odroids. there's tons of these different board manufacturers out there. They all do something very similar, but they all have their pros and cons and their differences and their tweaks, if you will. When talking about why would anybody, like one of the questions you've had before is like, why would anybody care about these things? The best way I could say is that if you're a person that likes to learn, these are great little devices to have if you really want to learn about how computers work, because everything's in one spot. And I'm not talking about how hardware actually gets put together, but you just want to learn how computers work because they're easy to put together. They're low power devices. They usually just run off of something that, you know, like a USB plug that you could plug into a wall, USB-C port that plugs into the board. Anywhere from 5 to 20 volts is all these things take in terms of power requirement, very low power. But there's a whole ton of other things you can do with these. With the power that they have now, you can literally use them for basic computing functionality. So if you think about it, you have an individual in your house, maybe, or in your family, a grandmother, a mother, a father, something, somebody who doesn't really mess with computers much, but they need something where they can get online, they can surf the internet, they can maybe check their email, you know, they want to do some simple Word documents. You can literally get one of these devices, and because they're so small and you can buy cases for them, so you buy the case, you put it in the case, it can literally mount to the back of their monitor, so there's no overhead anywhere, like you don't even really see where it is. You can connect a keyboard and a mouse to it because it comes with USB-C ports. A lot of the newer ones come with the ability to connect Bluetooth devices. And you've basically just given them this small, inexpensive computer that allows them to do just what they needed to do without having to overbuy. Because you walk into a big box store like a Best Buy or order something online, half of these things, they might not even use two-thirds of the functionality that comes with the device. You can obviously get away with doing a lot of this with an iPad, right? iPads are perfect for this kind of thing, but somebody may not want to shell out $700 on an iPad. It might be cost prohibitive for some people. This is a perfect way to get in that space, especially if they don't really care about the operating system. And if you're technical enough to be able to install a Linux operating system that just kind of takes care of itself, because again, if you're talking about basic web browsing and stuff like that, most of these operating systems will do that without any kind of real problems. And you can just set it up for them and let it go. And then, you know, they're no worse for wear and they're happy. What I like to use them for, other than the tinkering aspect, is home server. So, Mark, you and I have had this conversation before about backup strategies, putting everything in the cloud. What should you have in the cloud? What's important to keep in the cloud? That kind of stuff. These things are actually great, especially the newer ones, are great for being able to set up and run your own home server if that's something that you're into wanting to do. Again, it's something you have to want to do, but you could set one of these up in your home. All the ones I have seen have Ethernet jacks on them, but you can also get them where they're Wi-Fi capable or actually have a connection to put Wi-Fi, connect Wi-Fi to it. But you could put them on your local network at home. You can set it up with server software, and you can go as nerdy as setting up all the server software yourself, or you can go as light as just getting a server operating system that's already comes out of the box, installing it on one of these devices, using the USB cable on it to plug in one of those big fat external drives. Everybody's probably seen them. You can get them up into the tens of terabytes now in one of those little boxes that just kind of sit on your desk. And literally, you could use that to back up files in your house. You back up pictures, back up important files. Still, if you want to have stuff in the cloud, that's totally fine. But I'm a big proponent of having local copies of stuff as well as stuff in the cloud. Because one of my biggest fears is like, what if the cloud people decide that they go away or they do something where their stuff goes down and you can't get to your stuff for, I don't know, a couple hours would be fine for most stuff, but like, let's say days. Not that that's going to happen to anybody. Google is notorious. That's why I don't use Google for any of the backup stuff. Like, I don't use Google Drive for backing up any of my important stuff because I've heard stories and I've known people that have had problems where some random YouTube video or comment that was posted on one of their YouTube channels got their account suspended And when your Google account is suspended, your whole Google account is suspended. And they had to fight Google to get that information, to get that account reactivated. But in the meantime, they were locked out of everything. They were locked out of email. They were locked out of Google Drive. They were locked out of YouTube. They were locked because everything's tied together.
Yeah.
So, you know, Google goes in and says, the algorithm catches something that doesn't like. It automatically flags the account. In some cases, I think their AI has the ability to automatically lock the account. Then it's got to be looked at by a rep. There's that whole process. And just the safety and security for myself of knowing that I have extra copies of the really important stuff in more than one place, just to be safe. But you could do other things with these devices too. I know I've seen them used to build weather stations. Weather Underground, which we've talked about before, is an app that you can get on iPhone, you can get it on Android. If you look at that app, that will actually allow you, if you build your own weather station based on one of these small board computers and register it with their online site, like create an account, register it with their online site, you can then start uploading your weather data to Weather Underground and be another point on their map. So that's kind of like crowdsourced weather data. Homemade or self-made home security systems is another one I've seen a lot of people do this with. You set up these little Raspberry Pis around your house. They all come with these pins on them where you can connect a multitude of electronics devices to them. You can connect cameras to them, and then you can start taking your own camera footage if you're not into doing the whole Ring thing or any of the other devices. Home media servers. If you're one of these people that has a very large media collection, but you don't want to keep playing around with DVDs, or let's say you have a large media collection already that's sitting on a bunch of hard drives on your computer, you can convert all that. You can copy all that over to one of these big external drives, plug the external drive into one of these Raspberry Pis that you've set up. They have basically plug and play, install and go media servers that you can install on these devices. It'll read what's off the drive and turn it into almost like it's kind of like a Netflixy kind of interface where it'll give you all of your movies. If it's connected to the internet, it'll download all of the cover art and all that kind of stuff. And again, because it's so small, you could literally put it, mount it, or stick it to the back of your TV, and you've got a media server on your TV that's just running off of a drive in your house, and all your movies are right there. Netflix ever goes down, don't have to worry about it. You've got all of these movies that are good, and you want to stop paying, you want to do cord cutting, and you say, I've got 500 DVDs that I don't know anything to do with. If you have the time and you want to take the time, as long as you own the DVD, from my understanding, you can then create a digital copy of that for your own personal use. Just like with cassette tapes, right? You could burn all of your DVDs to files that then play on this media server, load them all up on a drive, and there you go. You pack your DVDs away so that you don't have to ever worry about them. You don't have to mess with them. You've got the original copies in good shape. And then you just play everything off of your TV. They're used very heavily in robotics for building robots. So if you're into building robots, you can go that way. And then I had already mentioned before, learning computer science on a budget, learning how to program. All of these things are really, really great uses for these small board computers.
Okay, so I just got back, come back at the perfect time.
Yep, Mark walked back into the room at the perfect time. No, he wasn't really gone.
Yeah, I wasn't really gone. For really fascinating, probably the first episode, I didn't have a lot to say, and maybe some people are going, I'm glad he didn't have a lot to say, but this is the Daniel Bourne show today, because this is way outside. I'm never going to do stuff like this, but it's okay. We can talk about things that one or the other of us don't know anything about, and we could just sit here and patiently try to learn something. So I appreciate it. If I ever want to do something like that, I'll just send you a text and say, hey, Danny, I want to do this, and you could do it for me and send it down here to Houston. So that's the easy way out. So I appreciate you talking about see if I can remember without looking, the single board computers. I remember that correctly.
You got it.
See, I wasn't even looking. I was trying to see. I was paying attention. So appreciate you talking to us about that. And now, if you are a listener of the show and you're like, hey, I got a question, or hey, I have a comment about something Danny said. I think Danny said something wrong. I doubt he did. But if you want to do that, Danny, we have a very special place that they can go to that is free and it lives on your phone. So what is that place?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Mark. That place would be our Two Bald Nerds WhatsApp channel.
WhatsApp.
So if you go over to WhatsApp and you search for the number 2, bald, B-A-L-D, and the word nerds, N-E-R-D-Z, search
or
for that.
Zed, as they say in England.
That's right, they do, Zed. Search for that channel. Mark and I are both administrators. Request to be added, we'll add you in. And you can comment, you can give us show topics if you've got a topic. You got questions, you got comments. You want to tell me I did something wrong or said something wrong or want to say that I said something right or whatever. Just become part of the conversation. We're really trying to build that up. Right now it's just Mark and I. And we talk so much on other platforms that a lot of times we're not really talking in there. But we'd like to build that up a lot as much as we can. We'd love to have you listeners as part of the conversation. So come on over and check it out.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week with another episode. I don't know why I started with an Italian accent. I said, well, it looks like we're coming up, but next week. We'll be back next week with another episode. What is it going to be? We don't know. It's going to be a surprise. Well, we know, but we're not going to tell you. So you can look at next week, subscribe to the podcast, and then when it releases, it'll come automatically in your podcast player, and then you can just press play. So until next week. We always end the show the same exact way because this is the Two Bald Nerds podcast, which means, Danny, what do they have to do?
They have to stay nerdy.